Blog Talk Radio.
Down show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A and Mr. Edwards in Studio B. Mr. Edwards, hello, how are you?
Real good, Don. Good to have you back. We haven't heard from you for a while. What's going on?
Well, a little bit of everything. A little bit of this, a little bit of that. Just checking out the news here and there. I kind of cut my CNN and Fox News TV watching down to like a bare minimum. So I haven't been, TV in my office hasn't been on for more than a week and a half to watch anything. So I'm just doing a lot of reading and enjoying the beginning of summer.
Yes, yes. It's been beautiful the last 8 days here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul. It's been really beautiful, beautiful weather. In fact, they're even predicting a possible 100 degrees, which is kind of rare up here. But 100 degrees is brutal because we have so many lakes and so much water, and humidity shoots up to 80% et cetera. So anyway, there's a possibility of 100 degrees, maybe the humidity, maybe 105, 107, 108. But we'll see in time. So keep an eye on that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, with your buddies CNN and et cetera, nothing's changed. It's still talking about what they're talking about.
Yeah, it's kind of boring. Mr. Edwards, I didn't tell you about this in the pre-show production meeting, but I came across something I could give the guy credit, but he doesn't want me to tell anyone who sent it to me. But did you know the African American Leadership Forum went and shook down the United Way in regards to the support of the African American community in Minnesota? There's a letter I have here written.
What they do?
How'd
they do that?
They went
and the United Way's cut back on everything.
Well, yeah, the United Way cutting back on everything, but you remember back in 2009 when they cut $500,000 from the Minneapolis Urban League for some kind of fudging some numbers there, and I guess they went in and they talked to the Urban League, and they said they talked about the Urban League, and just let me read this paragraph, and I'd really like to hear your response, because for our listeners, domestic and international, Mr. Edwards was the longest serving chair there of the Minneapolis Urban League, and when they had over 200 employees and two schools, if I'm not mistaken, one in South Minneapolis and an elementary school.
Yeah, two schools.
In North Minneapolis.
Four pieces of property. Yeah.
Four pieces of property. So here's what they said. They said the Urban League is a premier African American led serving organization in the Twin Cities, African American community. It was established in 1926 in its mission to link African descendants and other people of color to opportunities that result in economic success and prosperity, and effectively advocate for policies that eradicate racial disparities. Here goes the good part, Mr. Edwards. In 2016, the Urban League served more than 6,000 individuals, families in various housing, health, employment, financial, and education programs, and advocated for more than 20,000 African Americans on policy issues, not to mention the role that it serves in convening and meeting place for the African-American community. It will talk about housing the Congressman Keith Ellison. But, just right there, I mean, do you have any comments for that before I get into my mischief?
Comment for, I don't see the document, and someone will put it on my computer, et cetera. I mean, the numbers are what they are. The responsibility of whoever wrote that report is to do an audit and confirm by auditing the numbers and et cetera. You know, tremendous amount of service with basically a minimal staff of no more than about 6-7 people. Urban League doesn't have really any staff. Most of the staff you see around the Urban League building is Representative Ellison's employees. So I don't know. Absent having the documents in my hands and having opportunity to vet them and authenticate them, I don't know what to talk about. But I do know I've been in the Urban League enough for some community meetings, primarily dealing with public safety. I don't know. They must have worked the staff to death. The staff must have been working 28-hour days. So that's all I can say.
Okay. Well, thank you. It looks like our guest is online, and let me – good evening, Ms. Money. Hello. Call has dropped. Okay, hopefully she'll call back. Yeah, the call dropped. So you need to use a landline there. Appreciate it.
Again, you said
she's the founder of Women Above Ground. This is the African American Leadership Forum.
African American Leadership Forum. Do they have research capabilities?
Well, no. This was actually a story written by Jeffrey Hassan. He said, African American Leadership Forum questions United Way's support of the African American community.
I see.
And
so,
they
were questioning how come the Urban League doesn't get more money, or were they trying to get the St. Paul Urban League reestablished? I'm not quite done.
They were talking about the Minneapolis Urban League, the Urban League in general. That it houses Congressman Keith Ellison, which it does, and like he just mentioned, most of the employees in the Urban League are walking around are his, basically, from his office going in and out. And they're saying that Urban League was not the only African-American-led serving organization upon which the United Way's acts fell. Other organizations named are being withheld so that not to incur further damage or retribution.
I don't know why they're concerned about that. I mean, that's a rather serious allegation. I do know that Sandra Smith Baker is leaving, I think, September 1st. Feels very united, which, everybody said was doing well. Now people said it's deeply in debt. She's going to be number two person at the Minneapolis Foundation. Maybe that's what Mr. Hassan and them were all concerned about. I really don't know.
Yeah, and people talked about that and kind of saw that coming because Mr. RT, former Minneapolis Mayor RT Ryback, is up at the Minneapolis Foundation as the executive director, who replaced Sandra Vargas, and people had been talking about that on little networks here and there that Miss Chandra Baker Smith was be headed that direction. So. And I didn't hear the update, but, if you're listening, you heard it here. Mr. Edwards, I think our guest is back. Let me double-check here.
Okay. Go ahead and get her in.
Bonita, is this you?
Yes. Hi, Don.
Hey,
hi, Don.
Hey,
how are you?
Thanks for calling. I'm doing great. We have on the line with us Bonita Bo Money. She's the founder of Women Above Ground, a networking organization that's dedicated to introducing the cannabis business to women of color. The organization is poised, or they might have opened, we'll find out, this first international chapter in Amsterdam. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. So where are you calling us from tonight?
Los Angeles.
That's a beautiful
LA.
Place.
Well, Don, why don't you do this as courtesy. Why don't you introduce her to your co-host so she understands she's talking to two black men.
Okay,
I'm going to
do that.
My name is Ronald Lee Edwards. I'm the co-host with Mr. Allen. Good to hear your voice. Okay, Don, go ahead.
I'm sorry, what is your name?
That's what, Mr.
Edwards? Okay, hi, Mr. Edwards.
Edwards, yeah. Ronald Edwards. Ronald Lee
Edwards.
Yeah. Oh, hi. Yeah,
Ronald Lee.
I'm the co-host with Mr. Allen. Yeah, so go ahead, Don.
And so that was my next move. Can you tell us a little bit about Women Above Ground and your adventures here? It seems like you're doing an awful lot, as young folks were saying, you're doing too much, but it sounds all good. Go ahead, tell us.
Well, Women Above Ground, and above is spelled ABUV for your listeners, because, they need to know how to spell it when they look for it. But it's a networking organization that really support people of color in the industry. So we're able to provide resources, education, the networking they need to get involved in this billion-dollar industry. I mean, this is truly a green rush, and I feel that people of color are not getting involved the way they should. You know, they themselves, which is really.
Yeah, I agree 100%. So, in some of the areas that you work in, here it says that you're a creator of the glass jar. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's called That Glass Jar, and it is a CBD. Yes, it's a CBD cream-based cream. It's actually all organic. It has 14 different extracts, organic extracts in it. And I didn't create That Glass Jar to just put out a product. My girlfriend was actually dying of MRSA, and MRSA is a it's a bacterial infection that is drug resistant. So it's a staph infection that is not really curable by any pharmaceuticals. So basically, they usually amputate the area that is infected.
Yes.
So yes, after 54 days of conventional treatment, they wanted to amputate the area, and she just couldn't wrap her mind around that. And so she left the hospital, and she researched, and she found that cannabis could possibly work. And ultimately, at that point, I was working with oils, cannabis oils for cancer patients. But I never had worked on a topical. And I had a friend in Maine, and Michelle was working with topicals. And but I researched that there were specific extracts that were going to work with MRSA. So we infused that into the cream and gave her an oil also with the same extracts, because at that point the MRSA had went into her blood, and then she used the cream and took the oils, and in 6 days the infection was gone. It killed the bacteria.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So are there any FDA regulations that you have to jump through? Or hoops you have to jump through in regards to your oils and your creams that you make?
Well, not anything major. I mean, as long as we keep it homeopathic, we're okay. But then you can't really make medical claims. And the problem being is also we can't do clinical trials because it's not federally legal. Okay, but the thing about it is that we can do product reviews. We can test on animals, things like that. So, you know, it's very hard to market it because you really can't. You can't really make any claims, and we don't, but we know what our patients have used it for, because they've used it for like psoriasis, eczema, burns. I just had someone that used it for shingles, which I've never ever, seen a shingle case, but this was horrible. I mean, it's just like bone sores everywhere. It's just horrible. But it really started rejuvenating the skin like within days. So,
okay.
Pretty amazing.
Well, I'm looking at your press release here, and there's something that I want to get into, and then I'm going to pass over to Mr. Edwards for questions. Why are blacks and Latino poised to miss the green rush, and what is the green rush?
Well, the green rush is the new legal cannabis industry. And, you know, like I tell people, I speak a lot at different conferences, and my thing is that ultimately, you don't have to touch the plant to be in the industry. There's so many ancillary industries involved in cannabis. So anything that you would need in a mainstream business, you would need in the cannabis industry. So HR, payroll, marketing, packaging, security. So everybody does not have to cultivate or open or have a dispensary. So, you know, it only makes sense because the war on drugs was targeted towards our people of color. You know, so from 1983 to like 2004, it was like 56% African American males, and then 36% Latinos, and then 14% white. But Department of Justice numbers say that basically consumption is the same. You know, it's all equal. So why is it that, you know, you have that such disparity in the numbers when it comes to, you know, the arrests and prison sentences?
Oh, that's real. Mr. Edwards, do you have any questions for our guest?
Oh, yes, certainly.
Mr.
Thank you. Yes, just a couple clarifying questions. What was the date of your FDA approval? certification. They certified and approved it when?
I don't have FDA approval.
Oh, you don't have FDA approval. Okay.
No, I don't have FDA approval.
Okay.
No.
But my associate asked about jumping through hoops and et cetera, and I thought that as you talked about that, that was also a reflection that there was at some point FDA approval. So you don't have FDA approval. Okay.
No,
but
no, we're
not
really looking for that either. I mean, ultimately,
right, gotcha.
You know, again, yeah, I mean, this is certainly illegal still, so, you know, we have those
okay.
issues. What I was saying is that we can't do clinical trials because of the fact that it's still fairly
right.
legal, illegal. But, you know, but then
so,
as long as we keep
yeah,
it homeopathic,
sure.
we really don't need that.
Right. On that particular note, what has been your profit portfolio, if you will? How much profit have you made off this entity?
I mean, our profit has been pretty minimal just because we haven't really put it on the market. I mean, ultimately, it's just been developing because originally I didn't make it to put it on the market. So I never went into this with the intentions of creating a topical and selling it or putting it on the market. It was basically by demand that we had to, you know, actually put it out there because we were giving it away. Because so many people start asking us for it. So we were just giving it away, and then we're like, look, okay, this doesn't make any sense financially. They just keep giving this away. So
mm-hmm.
we decided to actually market it. So we'll be ramping up probably in the next month or so to actually go full force and put it on the market.
Okay. But let me touch on this particular area, because obviously, according to what my associate, Mr. Allen, read me before we went on
mm-hmm.
the air with some material that came from your organization,
mm-hmm.
you are doing business now in Rotterdam, the Netherlands, right?
Yes, Amsterdam. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Now, of course,
we have a chapter there.
Very, yeah, the Netherlands is a very liberal country with regards to drugs, marijuana, things like that. Has the government itself been very receptive?
Well, I'll tell you, I think people are very misled about the Netherlands. I mean, they're very open about consumption, and they're very, you know, liberal about consumption, but it's illegal to cultivate, and it's illegal to transport in the Netherlands.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So it's not liberal. So actually, you know, their laws are very archaic, really.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So they need reform, and they're working on trying to reform that, because ultimately, if you ask any owner of a coffee shop there where they get their cannabis from, and they're going to say, I don't know.
Oh, they're
going to say, illegal to grow. It's illegal to grow.
So how
I mean,
how
and,
do
and
you air- move it? How do you move it into the country, into the Netherlands? I mean, how is it shipped in? How is it transported? And do the
It's all black market illegal because it's illegal to transport
okay.
and it's illegal
okay.
to grow. That's what I'm saying. But when the laws were written 50 years ago, the thing about it was, as the prime minister that legalized consumption and sales forgot to say it's okay to grow it and it's okay to transport it. So those two areas are highly illegal.
Is that the current prime minister, or was that a prior prime minister?
No, it was a prior prime minister. So now they are working to try to change the laws, you know, because they need to update them. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me ask this question. Is there any kind of movement as it pertains to your enterprise that also talks in terms of, because just a couple minutes ago you talked in terms of incarceration, is there a disproportionate incarceration, which many
uh-huh.
have talked about for a long time? Is there any move afoot to try to formulate a plan so that there is reduced sentencing and et cetera for the disproportionate number of African Americans and Latinos that are incarcerated?
Yeah, so that would come with decriminalization. We'd have to decriminalize so that, you know, these people that are still in prison can get out because they need to. It's ridiculous that you have people making billions of dollars off this plan and you still have people in jail for it and in prison.
Okay. All right, let me ask this question because,
you know,
we certainly want to hold you there. Who are you working with in the California Assembly on legislative initiative, if you could share it with?
That I personally work with, I'm not a lobbyist group, so I don't personally work with anyone per se, but there are groups that are specific to different laws, regulations, lobbying, things like that.
Oh, I see.
That would deal with
the
different politicians.
Okay. Can you just give us a couple names of, and the reason is because we have a similar situation here in the state of Minnesota. Is there some specific, you know, well-known advocates out there that you could give their names over the air?
You mean as far as groups?
Yes, working on legislative initiative, legislative change.
Yes,
up in,
definitely.
Up
like
in Sacramento.
The LA Cannabis Task Force is one of them, and they work very close on a local level and a state level.
Mm-hmm. And who heads up that organization, if we may ask?
Ariel Clark. She's a cannabis attorney who's been in the fight for a lot of years, you know, good 10 years, if not more, in L.A.
Okay.
And,
okay.
Yes.
What about up in San Francisco?
I don't know. I don't really deal in San Francisco. I'm out of L.A., so I don't really deal in San Francisco.
Oh, you don't know San Francisco. Okay. All right.
No.
Is there anyone specifically up in Sacramento, which is your state capital, is there anyone up in Sacramento that whose name should be known that people may want to contact?
You know what? I don't know specifically who they should contact, but I'm sure that, you know, if they want to contact the LA Cannabis Task Force, that would be the ones to talk with if they are looking to deal.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I appreciate it for your time and response. Go ahead. Back to you, Mr. L.
Thank you. So, Bonita, how do people get in touch with you?
Yes.
Your website. I know you have a Facebook page and you have Twitter and all that. What's the website for Women Above and that Aground that is that people can go to find out more information?
Well, they can go to Women Above, and it's spelled ABUV, aboveground.com, and they can also go to my Facebook page, which is Women Above Ground on Facebook, and also thatglassjar.com and thatglassjar, and they can look me up personally as well, which is Bonita Bo Money. And then also, I am in Florida, by the way, this week. We're doing the Southeast Cannabis Conference, and we're actually opening up the conference with a diversity breakfast mixer. So it'll be outreach to the community, people of color that generally wouldn't make these conferences because of the cost, you know, because they range anywhere from $400 to like $1,000 per conference. So most people of color aren't able to make those conferences. So we're giving away free tickets to the expo for anybody that comes to the breakfast. So it's going to be in Fort Lauderdale,
Florida.
Excuse me,
just cut in. At what part of Florida are you talking about?
Fort
State,
Lauderdale.
County, Miami. Fort Lauderdale.
Fort Lauderdale.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, we'll be at the
site.
Yeah. The site is the Fort Lauderdale Convention Center. And our diversity breakfast will be from 8 to 10 at the Hilton Marina.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yes, which is right near the convention center. So we definitely urge people to come out and, you know, be able to, you know, our event is completely free, and we want that outreach, you know, because we want to start reaching out to people of color that generally would not come to these kind of conferences. So come out and get educated, start networking, know who's involved, and get involved.
Okay, appreciate that. And for our listeners, I'll get some more information from Bonita, and I will put that up on our the Ron and Don Show page, so you get that information, that link to register or attend the breakfast. In closing here, is there anything that you want our listeners to know, our domestic and international listeners, about what you're doing besides the conference and other things and how they can support you moving forward?
Well, they can definitely join Women Above Ground. We also have Men Above Ground, you know, but I would really like to encourage everyone to get involved. We have a great new industry that is making people very, very, very wealthy, creating generational wealth. So, you know, even though you have a lot of states that are not legal yet, they may just be medicinal or they may just be, you know, not legal at all, the dry states, you know, people still can get involved by, you know, they can still invest in cannabis companies, things like that. So there are ways for them to get involved, even though their state may not be legal yet. So I would definitely encourage that, because if they wait too long, it's just going to be, you know, they're going to miss the boat, really.
Okay. Well, Badia Bolt Money, we'd like to thank you for being with us tonight and hope to have you on again in the near future. We appreciate your time there from Los Angeles, California. And again, can you give that website out one more time?
Absolutely. It's okay. womenaboveground.com and thatglassjar.com.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time, and we look forward to speaking to you again.
Absolutely.
Take
Thank
care.
You. Thanks for having me. You guys have a good evening.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, all right then, Donna. Okay, so that'll be interesting. Big activity there in southern Florida, Fort Lauderdale. That should be interesting. Make sure you get that posted. Well, what else we have, Don? I'll open the phone line just in case. It's been a while since we've had our phone lines open, so why don't you just pull the number out there?
Sure. That number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904, and the phone lines are wide open.
Yeah, go ahead on, Don. You introduced this study or this report by Jeffrey Hassan, who is the, I think, executive director of the Black Council or whatever they're called. I'm just trying to get a feel for what else did they say about the United Way's response to their challenge, if you will, their concerns, if you will, their frustrations. Well, what else did Mr. Hassan say?
Well, I'm looking at the letter. I actually copied and pasted it on a Word document and printed it up, so it's about 3 pages long. And they talk about meeting with CEO Sarah Caruso of the Greater United Way's Twin Cities to discuss the poor reputation that the United Way had among many African-American leaders in the African-American community who do not consider the United Way a friend of the community, and his attitude to the community and its attitude towards the community to be paternalistic. And it says here, Carson argued that the reputation was undeserved, unjustified, and that she and her organization would work with ALF to improve this situation. And that's just the first paragraph that I just went through and kind of pulled things out there. And the United Way did take a hit. And in the third paragraph of this particular article, it says United Way claims that despite a 13% shortfall in its discretionary revenues, it has increased its investments 19% in the African-American-led serving organizations. However, the list now includes organizations like the Southern Minnesota Regional Legal Service, known as Legal Aid, and ALF. They said ALF questioned the sincerity of the United Way and including organizations like Patrick Henry High School and Legal Aid as African-American-led serving organizations. Also in April 2017, United Way representatives asked to meet with ALF's executive director to give him the heads up on cuts in funding that would be made because of a 13% shortfall in United Way revenue. ALF's executive director was informed that the cuts would be made equitable across all organizations. However, that is not what has taken place. Double exclamation point. And so I guess this, you know, it doesn't have a list of names of the people, Mr. Edwards, who went in to meet with the United Way. But, you know, I remember the United Way when a gentleman by the name of Dave Ellis was in charge of quite a few million dollars that he did route quite often to the Urban League and other ventures in North and South Minneapolis, the Twin Cities in general. And I know he felt on a couple occasions he was taken advantage of. And I think this is one of the things that led to his departure into a private consulting business, but also when Scott Gray took over the Urban League after Mr. Clarence Hightower had left, just right then and there during that transition, the United Way took their second $500,000 contributing to the Urban League for health programming on the second floor back up there. And the year before, 2008, they had took the first because of from what I understand, a whistleblower inside the Urban League that was asked to put names down that they didn't serve, and she wouldn't do that. and she ended up getting dismissed.
Mm.
So I guess the United Way is actually looking for some people. You know, you can't go in there and shake them down if you're not serving the people. And I just have a real problem, Mr. Edwards, me personally. I mean, I can't, how can I put this? Journalistically, I can't confirm or deny that they served more than 6,000 individual families in Syria, housing, health, and employment. When, you know, you serve 6,000 families, you need a staff of at least 50. That's period.
Uh-huh.
You advocate for more than 20,000 African Americans, you should have a staff of at least 50. And the agency, if that's happening, then the numbers from city data would not show what it shows as far as unemployment, homelessness, that over 91% of the residents in North Minneapolis that use North Point are 174% below the national poverty line or the federal poverty line. And
uh-huh.
So with that said, you know, this is a huge issue. If this is true, then where does it break? What part of the line does this story become a fairy tale? You know, if
yeah,
that's the
well,
case. I mean, I have.
Yeah. I'm like you. I have no idea. Let me do this.
Yeah.
Let me go back to show our listening audience, particularly our domestic and international, how far this goes back, though. You named a Scott Gray, who now works in Atlanta, used to be the director of the Madison, Wisconsin Urban League, and then came here to Minnesota. Before that, he worked for the organization in Milwaukee, and before that, he worked for somebody up here in Minneapolis. So that's going back about 20 years on Scott Gray. Let me see. Scott Gray took over from Clarence Hightower. Clarence Hightower, who now is a not only the director of the Washington Ramsey County CAP agency, Community Action Programs, but he also is a vendor, the only one of color at the Target Field, the home of the Minnesota Twins, joining probably the most successful African-American entrepreneur, Dr. Louis King. And let's see, so after Clarence left, it was the late Gary Suddeth, in fact, who died while in office. And then prior to that, it was a man by the name of Gleason Glover, who was forced out and then died about a year later. So that goes back about 40 years. So it's quite
mm-hmm.
clear that at some point the organization grew and then some things happened. Now, we never talk about, just like we don't talk about the Historical Foundation, we never talk about the collapse of the St. Paul Urban League under Willie Mae Wilson. And
mm-hmm.
I'm not understanding why that is, because it was so sudden, if you will, that total collapse. In fact, I think the building that used to be the Urban League's headquarters there on Selby is still sitting there, kind of boarded up almost. It's difficult, really, to lose an Urban League in any city, if you will. And in a editorial op piece on my column in the Spokesman Recorder about 8 years ago, I raised the question: how in the heck did this happen? And St. Paul's leadership didn't pay any attention and did not have a contingency plan. So I imagine that the United Way, as they were taking money, downsizing the Urban League, probably were keeping in mind the quietness of the leadership in the African-American community, Minneapolis and St. Paul, during the collapse of the St. Paul Urban League after 60, 70 some years of operation here in the Twin Cities. I repeat again, it's really difficult to lose an Urban League, in your city, because normally the bosses, basically keep it running. And in fact, many of the white corporations still remember it many, 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 many years ago, because the original name of the Urban League was the Industrial League until 1925-26. So, but maybe we'll have some callers, maybe we'll have some questions, some observations about the numbers that that Mr. Hassan revealed, reflected on, that the Urban League of Minneapolis was involved in. Those, like I said, those are, interesting numbers. and had to be a yeoman job with such a small staff now employed by the Urban League, if you will. That's, there couldn't be any more than about 9 people up there, if they're that many. So anyways, phone lines are open, though. You know, Mr. Allen has raised this conversation. He has reflected on a letter written by Jeffrey Hassan, the executive director. That should be what his title is on the letter, right? Is that what it is, Don? You still there?
The executive director, African American Leadership Forum, Jeffrey Hassan.
Yeah, there it is. So he's the athletic, he is the executive director. And so that, in fact, it was the position formerly held by Gary Cunningham, the husband of the current mayor of the city of Minneapolis. At the time, Mr. Cunningham was the number 2 man at the Northwest Area Foundation, which is the old Northern Pacific Foundation or whatever. And in those days, there used to be some pretty nice funding coming from the Northwest Area Foundation to the African American Leadership Group, if I remember correctly. That was some pretty nice funding that was going on. In fact, we talked about it, I think, on this program maybe 5 years ago, but folks indicated that that was kind of a no-no and we shouldn't have been raising questions about those that are beyond being examined to see what they were doing. But I take us back to the days of Mr. Cunningham and his position at the Northwest Area Foundation as the number 2 person. Those were the good old days. Things were going real well. Yes, we have a call. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, we don't have a call, but the reason why I was not on the air with you when you just asked me like 2 minutes ago, Don, like you were checking if I was there, is because we have a breaking news report that we have the exclusive on. The Council on Black Minnesotans, now the Council on Minnesotans of African Heritage, was sued by – what's that?
I said, what, did it fire Dr. Porter?
No, not yet. It was an employee they had in a Rochester satellite station, Cola Nomley. She was an employee there, and the executive director asked her to she needed to speak English better, and she was going to hire Vivian Jenkins to help her learn English. But also, Cola turned around and talked to the state, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here off this legal document, that Mr. Porter was hired, a current consulting employee, that he was actually under her employ while working for the state, and he hired her to work for the state for the council to put on a seminar last February 2016, which is against the rules. You can't do that. They said the state will catch up with you. The attorneys asked for Mr. Porter's resume, but he decided not to give it to them. And because they were under the contention that he was not qualified, and the council has had 2 closed meetings about employees there. And this all generates, Mr. Edwards, because you know when Ed McDonald was the executive director of the Council on Black Minnesota, he actually was a go-getter. He developed a legislative agenda that not even Senator Bobby Joe Champion, Senator Jeff Hayden, or State Representative Rena Moran would even touch. And they didn't even like him because he was an uppity Negro, as we say, according to them, because they didn't like what he said. But he had it down. He had it going on. Well, as of this legislative session, the United Black Front legislative agenda has not done anything. There's not been any reports. There's only been fundraisers. And, again, we come out of this legislative session with the Council of Minnesota of African Black Minnesota African Heritage, excuse me, with nothing, and eyes on
Lewis
Porter.
In all fairness, from the left, Mr. Allen, according to many of the leaders, the 2016 session was a great year, and didn't the African American college community come out of there with $75 million?
Well, as we said before, Mr. Edwards, last year after that was over, we've traced to where exactly the money went. The money went to Emerge. The money went to Minneapolis Economic Development Agency, which is MEDUG, ran by Gary Cunningham, who was the mayor of Minneapolis's husband. And they went directly funding, direct funding to Somali agencies, $1 million plus. But as far as the Urban League, a Sabathany, a Stair Step Foundation, a North Point, well, North Point is separate. They get county funding. So let me just
read that. North Point is part of Hennepin County. Yeah, Hennepin County.
And so there was no direct funding to any black agency. And again, you don't hear anybody talking about it. It was supposed to be 70 million in 2016 over 2 years. 35 million the first year, the other 35 million in 2017. Now that money, from what I understand, I've been checking because I'm following that on my on the internet and getting alerts. So far, none of that money has been awarded, or I can see plainly, has been awarded to any African American
going
or
all
black
the way
American
back to the summer of 2016. Is that right? Wow.
So it's either sitting there or these people. But to make a long story short, I'm trying to get the woman who actually sued the council and won $10,000 to call in. She's in Rochester. I sent her a text and asked her because she could probably tell. She'll give us a lot more, and I'd like to have the information to from the source as well as you do. And we'll just see here if she calls in. She has not texted me back. But I did send her the number, the call-in number, and, you know, I would like to get this archived at least. So she is, you know, we have this statement, and before I go ahead, publish the legal documents. So.
Yeah, okay, so the bottom end of the narrative is that there was a possible violation of Minnesota's anti-discrimination law as it pertains to nationality, her being a Somalian, I think you said. And she took a action. She filed a legal claim. Was it with the State Department of Human Rights or who?
Yes, it was the federal courts.
I see. She went into federal court. And ultimately, because the courts really insist on some kind of they like for you to try to reach some kind of settlement and agreement and et cetera and go on about your business. So she received, according to your information, she received $10,000 as part of the settlement for a discriminatory act by Dr. Porter. I want to be sure so that we don't, you know, slander anybody. Dr. Porter, was he required to do it, or was the so-called African-American Council required to pay that $10,000?
I don't know. I don't have that detail yet. That's what I was trying to get her on so she can explain exactly where the money came from. We know it came from the state, but what entity or what group or what budget, where it was encumbered and paid.
Well, that's
you know,
Yeah, that's a great interest to the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota to know that. Discrimination by a group that is supposed to deal with Americans of color and foreign birth and et cetera, they're discriminating against the very people that they're supposed to be providing protection, along with, of course, the Minnesota Human Rights Department and, of course, the courts and et cetera. That seemed to be a pretty, you know, decent piece of news. I would have thought that the Minnesota Black Leadership Group would have also expressed some concern about that kind of politics. But anyways, hey, you know, all you can do is what you just done, break the story. Hope that the young lady called from Rochester, Minnesota, where apparently she lives, if you will, and that's where also, if I'm not mistaken, that's where she sought employment in the satellite office, as it is referred to. Is that satellite office still up and running in Rochester?
I do not think it is. I don't think they've had anybody in there. You know, they beefed up the staff here locally, you know, a couple of young cats up there. And I guess from what I understand from the young lady is that Dr. Porter has been working from home quite a bit. And things are, you know, according to her, that things were not getting done. And there were some concerns because, you know, Mr. Edwards, 3 months ago, I sent a data request for the event they had at Arnella's on Thursday night with KMLJ's Freddie Bell and the Council of Minnesota's African Heritage. And in that data request, I asked, how did that benefit the community? What was the outcome? What were your numbers, you know, estimates? And because I see someone by the front door collecting money and people eating chicken, you know, I didn't see very much, constructive.
Freddie Bell and his wife, were collecting money at the door. Mm-hmm. In fact, if anyone wants to go back on demand of this program, I think it was a little over a year ago that we were kind of having this discussion about Dr. Mm-hmm. Porter having some activities over there which were possibly in violation of the rules and regulations of the state of Minnesota for state entities, you know, like departments and commissions and things like that. I don't know whatever came of it. I know you were trying to get Dr. Porter to respond and et cetera. He apparently never really did, so I don't know what happened with that. But that's interesting that there was a legal action confirmed by the Federal District Court for the Federal District of Minnesota. In other words, what I'm saying to our listening audience, anybody wants to verify what Mr. Allen has just indicated, all they have to do is make inquiry, go down, pay a small minimal amount, and the clerk of the court will print up the lawsuit, the issues at hand, and the final determination by either a federal magistrate or a federal judge. So I hope that she gives us a call. Maybe we'll, maybe next week you may want to send out and we'll, would ask Dr. If you'll be on the air next week, ask Dr. Porter to give us a call, and talk in terms of what happened, how the mistake was made, because clearly it was a mistake because the federal court for the Federal District of Minnesota said so. What else we got, Don? What else is happening, man? Yeah.
I just got the judge was Donovan Frank, the civil rights employment case.
Donovan very well. Mm-hmm.
The letter to the magistrate. Oh, I got it all. Oh no, I'm not paying for it. Just a minute here. Let me go back here. Let me just go back one. I got a site that has everything on it. Let me just see here. It has a letter to the magistrate. The proceedings. Tuesday, June 6th, was the last day. Wednesday, May 17th, the complaint, pretrial scheduling order was Monday, March 13th, and it went all the way, like I said, to June 6th, letter to magistrate. Let me see if I can even pull that up, because it's right here.
Sure, Judge Donovan Frank, veteran judge of the Federal District Bench here in Minnesota. That'd be interesting. Yeah, I'm quite sure that some of the leadership of our African American community can articulate what happened, if you will.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, in the documents you have in front of you, who is the attorneys of record? Who represented the defendant who was successful? Do you have it?
I will tell you, and I would let me just read this here. Let me go down. William French, it looks like.
And, I've heard the name before. Yes, I've heard the name of Mr. French.
There's a settlement conference held on the 5th of June. The parties are ordered to report to Magistrate Judge Rao, R-A-U, no later than 5 p.m.
And Judge Rao would be the magistrate assigned to the office of Judge Donovan Frank. That's the way it works in the federal court system. So...
yeah.
He was the magistrate. He presided over the settlement conference, and they came out of it with $10,000. Yeah. All right, then. Well, that's interesting. That certainly is breaking news, along with the yeoman job that the Minneapolis Urban League did with basically no staff. What was that number again, Don? 20,000?
20,000. It says here, let me just, so we get it straight for our listeners here, it says... They served more than 6,000 individuals and families in its various housing, health, employment, financial, and education programs and advocated for more than 20,000 African Americans on policy issues, not to mention the role that it serves as convening a meeting place for the African American community.
Okay. All right, then. Okay. Yeah. Well, like I said, it's obvious they're doing a lot of things. I know that Mr. Belton is going to be one of the speakers for the national conference that they're having here on peace, justice in the African American community. And so I know the Urban League obviously has been in the forefront of some of these safety issues because, you know, yesterday we lost another young African American life. We've had a lot of shootings, but, you know, people don't like for us to, well, they don't like for me specifically to talk about it. It's unnecessary to bring forward that kind of information that provides a negativity. Maybe they should tell that to the grieving parents of the deceased or to some of the young African-American women who have been shot here in the last 30 days who have been paralyzed. Really, really odd, really a phenomenon that is chilling. The last two young African-American women that have been shot in Minneapolis were both paralyzed, permanent paralyzation. But we don't talk about it. And then, like I said, we had a shooting, a homicide around 7:05 yesterday in North Minneapolis. But I guess it's just something we just should not talk about. Leaders say they aren't ready. And we just have... I don't know what kind of plan we have, because with the level of violence, we're averaging a shooting a day and a homicide every third day. So, but anyways, get that phone number again. Maybe we got some activists out there that want to give us their thoughts on how to solve the problem.
Yeah, the phone number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904.
All right.
And we are live on the air, yeah.
On the air, yeah. Any response from Rochester, Don, on the
No, not as yet, but I'm going to plug this.
Okay.
Yeah, no response from her as yet. This is almost worse. Let me just see here, Mr. Edwards. I'm clowning right now, so give me a second. Let me just look up something here real quick while I do this.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see.
Don, while you're doing that, someone has just texted me, and they're saying you gentlemen haven't said anything about some problems with the Rondo Development Group in St. Paul. I'm not familiar with that. Is there some problems with the Rondo Development Group
could
in St. Paul?
What I understand is there's some problems because there's several different Rondo organizations. And I know some people in St. Paul that were concerned about who to deal with it and when to deal with,
Okay.
And so I don't know all the names involved, but I know that's cooking up to another head again. And so I guess by this time next week, we'll have all the ducks in a row.
Oh,
figure
okay.
that
oh,
out.
Rondo situation, yeah. I mean, how many different Rondo groups are there other than Rondo Cafe or something like that? I mean, but someone said it was the Rondo Development Corporation. Yeah. Okay.
There's that. There's a Rondo. There's a Rondo organization working on a park right off Western
there.
Right off 90.
There's Rondo Days.
There's
yeah.
Rondo Days.
There's Rondo
yeah.
Jazz concert, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. Someone said to me. Okay. I'm just wondering, with all these kinds of stories breaking, if you will, all over the place. By the way, congratulations to Stella West and her group up there at the end. We're kind of throwing information out.
Yeah, I'm still here.
There's somebody
here.
That said they're still there with us. Oh, okay, you're talking to. Yeah, we're the whole situation at North Point that now has a special team of mental health experts who are on the crime scenes and are out working, apparently such as yesterday's homicide and one a couple days before that, et cetera. Stella West and her group up there. Nice pieces of money coming in for individuals there, and they're out on the streets, as they say, doing all kinds of therapeutic work and developing relationships and et cetera. And this is tied in with the GBI, which is a group which is dealing with the wealth of the incorrigibles, if you will, young African-Americans, primarily men. And I'm just surprised we haven't gotten more discussion in our beloved community about this, if you will. A nice grant of money given to the West Broadway Association, if you will, to deal with the violence up and down West Broadway. And
That must be nice.
Yeah.
That must be real nice.
Kathy Spann, who is the chairperson of the, I think it's the McKinley neighborhood, I'm not sure. I think they're having a meeting tonight or tomorrow to talk about the violence that is going on and the deaths and woundings and incapacitations and et cetera. So we've got a lot of people out there working on the problem, according to their narratives. Anybody has any obvious information for us? give us a call. I'm just, very interested in seeing what's happening because we have so many African-American families in need as it pertains to all this violence. I mean, it is terrible. So,
yes, we do.
Again, those phone lines are open.
Yes, they are. 347-426-3904.
So we've got some people in the queue, but they're just listening, right?
Just listening, yep.
Okay. I'm surprised we haven't gotten any call on the Peace Summit because people were telling me 2 weeks ago that I didn't know what I was talking about. There wasn't going to be any peace anything, if you will. People didn't have the credibility to get it done. And then lo and behold, I received an email 2 days ago indicating the dates of the conference and the participants led by Stevie Wonder. And apparently we're looking at the arrival of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. So, but I'm not sure what is going on. Though I do know that the Minneapolis Police Department and the St. Paul Police Department indicated they will not be involved under any circumstances, which is, kind of troubling, because you would think everybody would be concerned about peace, tranquility and life. Mm-hmm. But I guess they're not. What you got, Don? You got anything there? Somebody calling?
No, I don't see. No one's calling in. And we have about, it's coming up on 2 minutes left of the show. And, again, that number is 347-426-3904. And like we said, we got about 27 people in the queue, 29 people in the queue, and they're just listening. And you guys are welcome to call in.
Okay.
And
we're coming
up
on 9:30? Yeah.
Yes.
We're coming up on
9:30?
9:28
and 26 seconds.
Yeah. All right, then, Don. Well, we moved along, and a lot of questions out there. You've broken some key news pieces. Rondo is one. The Urban League. The Black Leadership Conference or group or whatever. So we'll be back next week. And hopefully Don will be back with us. I know he's got a lot of assignments and et cetera. But we'll be back next week. So take us on home, Don.
Okay, here we go.